back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Dust has settled. We've talked to our listeners. We've seen the text line. We've heard from Jeff Merrick. I've heard from Justin, but my day is never complete without the voice of our insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit donvalleynorthlexus.com. Nick Kyprios, Stanley Cup champ and co-host of Real Kipper and Born. How are we doing, Kipper?
We need 15 minutes with that music and then deep breaths.
Right? Okay. We need to zen out. Is that what we need to do?
Yes.
Okay.
After
how do we do
game
that?
One Leaf Nation. Breathe.
Can you breathe?
That was ugly.
Can you breathe, though? Like, can you breathe after that?
Yeah, you can. I think there's enough. There's enough time. listen, this was later on in the series. There'd be a panic, no question. But there's time to recover here. And knowing or not knowing what's lies ahead for a guy like Victor Hedman, it's going to play a key in this series. And we still think it's going to be a long series here, despite what we saw last night.
Okay, so in your experience, what's easier to recover from, where you do get embarrassed, like the Maple Leafs did last night, or you're like the Edmonton Oilers who dominate a lot of the game, have a great game, perform well, maybe a little unfortunate, and lose sort of heartbreakingly in overtime, we'll say?
Yeah, I'd rather lose in overtime or lose by a goal than
I appreciate the honesty.
You witnessed last night, but that doesn't mean that you still can't find a way to tie this series up and then really be in a position of saying that we don't have to win both series in Tampa to come back home for a game 5 tied at 2. And really, That's what you're hoping for at this point, is that you come back, you rebound well, you win game 2, and then you go down there, and worst case scenario, you split. So these are the things that you start thinking about as a player, as players, management. It's not getting ahead of yourself outside of what you need to do now going into Thursday night, but it gives you an idea that there's room here, but we got to get to work, and we got to get to work as early as going to the rink today and reassessing where we failed and what we need to do to adjust.
Kipper, how do you start to maybe like fathom what lack of effort and intensity, grit, pride, heart that was shown, especially to start that game, with all things considering? Like, it was the moment to really start this journey in the off the right foot. Like, everybody had felt so confident.
Yeah.
I know you guys are cautiously optimistic as well, but there was so much positivity going into yesterday. And how does this team just not show up?
Yeah, I think if you're Brendan Shanahan or Kyle Dubas, I think you talk to Sheldon Keefe and you ask him, well, why were we not prepared? What went wrong? Did we overstimulate these guys? Did we have one too many meetings? Was there too many things that they were thinking about going into the game? I didn't like Sheldon's start to the game. I didn't like the fact that he pulled off Matthews and Marner seconds in, reacting to Cooper's line change. You've got a defensive zone face-off. You've got two of the best players in the world who are equally strong defensively. Why are you getting into, as Craig Simpson said, this early chess match of matching up lines? When you're at home, that's your strength. Put your best players on the ice and say, here they are. It's up to you guys to shut them down. It just seemed like after that, he went to that fourth line, Aston Reese with a horrific giveaway, Corey Perry wrapping around, and before little Bobby's in his seat, they're down 1-0.
I don't know how many little Bobbies there were last
little
night.
Bobby.
Disappointed little Bobbies.
But you can,
and they're all
you
crying.
Can picture what little Bobby looks like, right? Like, I could see the
Bobby's
little Bobby.
Little Bobby's in tears,
yes,
for
I
sure.
See little
he's
Bobby.
100% in tears.
Yeah. Not even one hand into the popcorn
no.
yet.
It's devastated.
Yeah. And now the popcorn's wet because the waterworks are definitely going off. Okay, so yeah, let's hang around on Keith for a second. Like, he's in an interesting spot because if you're the coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs and you're dealing with the context and the backdrop of all this postseason misery, like, it's on you to do everything in your capability to try to get this team in position. And if you mentioned it, maybe it's overstimulation. Maybe they're overwhelmed by information. Maybe you are bogged down by all that goes into preparing for a specific opponent. So, again, in your experience, big spot. You're a proven team, at least from the regular season standpoint. Is less more from a coaching standpoint?
I think so. And right now, these guys are as best prepared as they can. The roster's deep, or deepest we've seen in any stretch of these last 6 or 7 years. So let it just naturally happen. Let it fall in place. Don't get in its way, Ed. And that's where the guys have to come back. I'm sure a ton was said from Sheldon in the first and second intermissions. To come in today on a fairly clean slate without being responsible and, you know, reactionary to last night, you have to show it its respect. You cannot just brush it under the carpet and say, hey, we're starting fresh today. You got to go back and hold what happened last night accountable, but have the feeling like there's plenty of time, and we know we're better. We know we're a good team. And last night was a mental block, a physical block, emotional block. For whatever reason, they were not ready to play game one. And Sheldon has to own it, as well as the players on the ice. And listen, 1-1 going back into Tampa, it wouldn't put the Leafs in the worst spot.
No, I think that's certainly an attainable goal. What happens now between last night's loss and tomorrow's puck drop is interesting for what Sheldon Keefe can do and might do or might choose to stick with. Obviously, we'll get to what Bunting's situation and his outlook might look like. But I wonder if he's out of the lineup, is that Matthew Nyes' music? And is, like, any tinkering right now the wrong direction to go? And Justin's very much on, like, keep everything stable, right? But, like, if you have the Matthew Nyes card, which is a free card right now to play if Bunting's out, does that give you a little bit more leeway to move a couple things around without it being, like, cause for alarm?
Yeah, I don't see a world where Bunting's available game two. I got to think that they went into this stretch of, you know, making a dog's breakfast out of the salary cap down the stretch to get Matthew Nyes in. Those games were for a reason, and that was to assess whether or not you could put him into a scenario like this. And I think he passed the test. I don't know how effective he'll be. And again, you know, there's the chance that he will be overwhelmed by that moment, but I don't know what other options you have out there. You know, is it Wayne Simmonds coming back in for a little extra toughness? But was that an issue for the Leafs last night? I don't think so. I think you have to be in a position where you bring some size and skill in, and that lends towards Matthew Nyes. I don't think it's ideal. It's a hard situation now to ask a college kid to come in off a 7-3 loss. Like, in a perfect world, you want to put him in a position of strength to come in, maybe when it's an easier transition, not one where you've been humiliated the game before. But as we know, as Leaf Nation knows, not much is ideal this time of year for the Leafs. But I expect him to be in and Bunting suspended.
And it puts more scrutiny we would expect on the bottom six. Like, I can't imagine a world if Bunting's out, Cali Yarncroke doesn't jump up to the top line, because we've seen success recently there, which means Matthew Nyes slides into a bottom six, which frankly got exposed last night. I mean, there are a lot of people that got exposed. I don't know if I've ever seen TJ Brody play that bad. Justin Hall and Mark Giordano were a nightmare in front of the net. There were a lot of bad things going on. But the supposed improvements in the bottom six just weren't there. And now if you remove Yarncroke, add Matthew Nyes, I mean, there's just more questions, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. But they were around all season long, right? And if you look at that left side, and I've said it all year, it's the weakest link in the roster. And you not even ideal to think that Yarncroc's going to step up. Yarncroc's not a frontline guy. He's not a number one guy. Neither is Bunting. But your lineup reeks of, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul. And that's what you're going to have to do on the left side with Yarncroc, who should slot in there now with Matthews and Marner. But you got to get the two guys going too as well. And it just seemed like, you know, out of the gate, Matthews and Marner never got going. I know they had the points last night to kind of support that they did their jobs and provided offense, but it's about dictating the pace of play, not necessarily, you know, just end results. And they were far from their best last night either.
Yeah, let the record be known that despite a 3-point game for Mitch Marner, that was not a good game for Mitch Marner. Like, you could look back and, oh, you know, he's productive early on in the series. No, that was not a productive night for Matthews and Marner, not even in the slightest. We will see practice today, I believe at noon. The Bunting decision, rather, we're expected to hear after 3 p.m. when he has his hearing with the Department of Player Safety. So we're going to see new look lines before we know a decision on Michael Bunting. The Leafs can't just, like, you have to operate under the assumption that he's getting suspended, correct?
100%. And again, that's just a lack of discipline on his part. Playoff hockey's about, you know, every once in a while kind of pairing off with someone. His nemesis was Chernak early in the game, and to go back on him and take matters in his own hand was a horrific decision. And he will pay the price, and so will the Leafs, losing a serviceable player in Bunting. So, again, not ideal for Nyes to come in, but let's see what happens in game two.
Certainly not the reason that the Maple Leafs lost the game, the reffing, but definitely a talking point this morning. Were you happy with the way that the game was called, and especially if you look at how maybe other games have been called so far to start the series? For example, Boston and Florida, that was a pretty physical one. And then you look at how last night was reffed between the Leafs and Tampa. Are you seeing anything that we should keep an eye on?
It's, Ailish, when we're talking about officiating this time of year, you're not sure what you're going to get. But to sit here now and link the officiating to last night's effort or the debacle is a reach at best by Leaf Nation. There were suspect calls, no question. I hated the Luke Shen shove. That looked like
the first ever one-handed cross check. First ever. Yeah. Never happened before.
Camp's slash. It was not well officiated. But again, that's the least of my worries if I'm the Leafs right now. That's not my focus. You know, your 5-on-5 play is better goaltending, you know, better job in front of the net. You know, when it was all said and done, I think the Leafs were 2-for-4 on the power play, but you need more 5-on-5. You need more out of your star players. And, you know, giving a Tampa for the second consecutive game 8 power play opportunities and them coming up with 4 goals. I mean, that's the game right there.
Yeah, it can't be an excuse. You got to control what you can control. And a lot of the things that the Maple Leafs failed to do were things in their own control. Let's talk about Samsonov. You mentioned goaltending. Post game, he was pretty candid. He said he played like beep, which pretty accurate. Bounce back opportunity, something he can flush, or any little moments that you thought, oh, I've seen this before, and it's not an area of comfort for me as a fan.
He's going to get another opportunity in game two. You just don't bail on Samsonov after that he's had. And, you know, I think it gets a little dicey when you look on the bench and you see Wall there. And then after Wall, a university goalie, the Zamboni driver.
Oh boy.
So you got to stick with Samsonov. And giving him another opportunity to bounce back. It seemed like he didn't have long stretches all season long of poor play. He was not very good last night, and a little uncharacteristic of him at home. Mm. They have no choice to come back to him and just do a better job. Like, again, you're barely a minute into the game, and to watch Justin Hall let Corey Perry wrap around the net and not get any piece of him and puck watch, there's not a goalie in the world that can overcome that poor play.
Because we started the season, right, talking about the nerves that he was admitting earlier on. And, you know, the mental aspect, the mental block, this is like the biggest thing. The truest unspoken thing at this time is the mental hurdles that this team is trying to overcome. Like, we can only surmise how big of a deal is, what percentage, how it's affecting who. But Samsonov has been one of the few, and really the only, who's admitted to being nervous before. And he built up all this equity over the course of the regular season. And we're asking about how the playoffs too big of a spot for the Maple Leafs just in general. But is it too big of a spot maybe for Ilya Samsonov? Like, we were talking about, maybe ignorance is bliss with this guy. Maybe he doesn't really understand how much torment there really has been. But after game one, like, you can't reach for that, right? Like, he understands the spot. He's been nervous before. It's affected his play before. And that was as nervous and as bad as we've seen Ilya Samsonov play, at least we can surmise.
Yeah, listen, Justin, that was the question right from September, is that where's your goaltending, and, you know, whether or not it was going to be Matt Murray or Samsonov. And Samsonov always had this reputation for being a high prospect guy that had all the potential in the world, but just never rose to the occasion in Washington. So give him a chance here. He's got the experience of Matt Murray, who's won cups, although they haven't, you know, you got to look in the rearview mirror and look closely. They've been so far back from his recent games in Ottawa. And, you know, there's always that chance that you're going to take an inexperienced guy, bring him in there, and he might be overwhelmed. And there's still room for him to overcome that. But that's just his battle. And, you know, we'll see where this thing develops and how it ends up for Samsonov one way or the other. And it'll play a big part on where the Leafs go moving forward here. But everybody knew there was a chance that coming in, a guy like Samsonov without the experience, one win in his career, could be in a situation where the moment's too big for him. But he's got time to dig himself out, and everybody has to go through it for the first time. All the greats, Patrick Waugh, Marty Brodeur, they had to start somewhere. This is Samsonov's start. Let's see how it plays out.
All right, Kipper, on your road to being a Stanley Cup champion, I'm sure you've had to have some bounce back games, some flush it moments where you got 48 hours to come back as a completely different team than you were the night before. So the Maple Leafs need a short memory, I think, to get rid of what happened last night, but also maybe need to learn something, take something, make some action before tomorrow night's game. What actually does need to happen in that dressing room? Like, if you're in that room and you're looking around, is there something needs to be said? Is there some sort of leadership that we don't know as fans that might happen? Is that coming from the coach down, or is that the guys wearing the letter or not the letter in the dressing room? Like, what would you want to see from last night until puck drop tomorrow?
Yeah, there needs to be a few of those moments. I think that's why you bring in a guy like Ryan O'Reilly. As much as you look at Austin Matthews or Tavares or Morgan Riley, I do believe if they had it in them, it would have surfaced a long time ago to be a guy that can grab another guy by the cuff and just say, hey, listen, we need more out of you, or you know, I know we need more out of me. It has to be a reflection. It's the player's room, you know, at the end of the day, and coaches come in there and they guide and they set some boundaries and some guardrails that you hope that can help them succeed. But at the end of the day, it's the guys in that room that have to look at each other and go out there and do it collectively. You know, coaches still don't have one shift that can make a difference on the ice, as far as I can remember this game. So, yeah, I look at the reason why you went and traded for Ryan O'Reilly to go give Tavares a lending hand and Matthews. And I've been there. I've done it before. You know, here are the good signs that I see that we have here. And this is where we need to hold each other accountable. To me, that's Ryan O'Reilly in that room today and preparing for game two.
I was watching Ryan O'Reilly last night. I'm thinking, like, this is the only guy going. This is the only guy who seems to be rising to the occasion. He looked very good, but there was only so much he could do. And I'd love to be in his brain, honestly. Like, what is he thinking? Because he's seen success before. He's seen what it means. Yeah. And if there's no elevation, he's looking around being like, guys, we're in a playoff game here, and it's a bit different. And I wonder if he will stand up and say something. But, yeah, do you agree that O'Reilly stood out among Leafs? And was there anyone on a short list that you created that actually did pop yesterday?
Yeah, not really. It was that bad. But fair. I will say this, go back and listen to Ryan O'Reilly's post-game comments. And, you know, while some of it may be cliche, it's just the way he conducts himself, the way he sounds, the way he's not overreacting. The composure that he portrays in his interview, that's the guy I want 19 other guys to listen to today and tomorrow, and I think he can have a real calming influence on all of this going into Thursday night.
Last one for you, Kipper. The Leafs were booed off the ice after the first period. They were booed off the ice in the second period. We watched many stream for the exits midway through the third period. I think it's a completely appropriate response for fans to show that they were unsatisfied with what they saw. Do you see it the same way?
Oh, absolutely. And I think all the players would be in agreement, and so would management and the whole MLSE organization. And you got 48 hours to wipe that out. Again, 1-1 going back into Tampa with a sound win, with Austin and Mitch leading the way. Check a few boxes off with a sound game by Samsonov, good team defense, and start making people believe that this is going to be as close as most people thought.
A lot of hockey left, Kipper. I love the level-headedness that you bring to our mornings. Appreciate it. Can't wait to listen to Kipper and Bourne this afternoon. See if you still have that mental fortitude that you bring to our show.
And breathe, right?
Everyone
it's all in the breath.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great day, everybody.
Thanks, Kipper. Nick Kyprios, former NHL forward, Stanley Cup champion, co-host of Real Kipper and Bourne. And our insider brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Take a deep breath. The Maple Leafs are back tomorrow night. They got a chance to flush it and move on. 7 p.m. Maybe that's what the difference was. Extra 30 minutes.
7:30 starts, not good for anyone.
That's right.
What are we doing?
That was the problem. Somebody just texted in saying the Leafs should wear white jerseys at home. Maybe that's the problem.
It's another issue. There are
We're
a lot
all trying
issues.
To figure it out. Who knows?
Lots of good stuff there for Kipper. One thing quickly, because we got Dan Schulman on the other side. You got to start somewhere with a goaltender in these spots. But Samsonov starting in a must-win scenario with the future of the franchise hanging in the balance? If that's true, that you have to start somewhere and then you have to actually, like, take your licks first before you can be successful in the playoffs? Not great.
Oh, what other option do you have?
Well, this is Kyle. Like, again, the last
I also love that
the
Matt Murray discussion has just, like, disappeared. Like, no actual, like, confirmation of anything has happened. He's just not around. He's not anywhere.
He's not around.
He's just disappeared.
Not an option.
There's no statement on it.
No.
It's like, see you never.
The last person I want to criticize today is Kyle Dubas, because I think he's like, what else could you do? Goaltending has eluded him, though. And if, again, you mentioned Matt Murray's not even going to be in the building. Like, we don't know his whereabouts. He could be on an island sipping a margarita somewhere. Who knows what he's doing? But there was almost $5 million there. If you just stashed him on LTIR, Mark Stone came back.
Yeah, I got that
notification
yesterday.
A lot of bolstered rosters, right? There's $5 million there. If you want to get even more aggressive and be even better than you are from a roster standpoint, I mean, there's $5 million being squandered as we speak.
Let's flip to some positive vibes.
Y'all see Chris Bassett last night?
How about Chris Bassett? I know you had your eyes on the Maple Leafs, but hopefully you split-screened it with our Sportsnet Now Rogers Ignite app, because damn, we saw the Chris Bassett that the Blue Jays went out and grabbed all of his millions of pitches. Six inning shutouts, defeating the Astros 4-2, going for the series win tonight. We got Dan Shulman to bring us home with a little positivity on your hump day. Dan Shulman, after the break, we'll do a baby wake and rake as well. So send your picks in at 590-590. That's next.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's wrap up this Wednesday on the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish. We went through the highs and lows of the Maple Leafs' debut of the playoffs, mostly lows. But last night, Blue Jays were in action in Houston for game two of their three-game set, going for the series win tonight. And joining us now is Dan Shulman, play-by-play announcer for the Blue Jays with us here at Sportsnet. Dan, we need some positivity this morning, and you're just the guy, all right?
It's been rough, Dan. It's been rough.
So tell me, obviously, I was doing the Jays game, but I was following the Leafs score. What were the highs of the Leaf game that you discussed earlier?
That it
today?
Ended.
That's a great call. That's a great call.
That we got to beat the traffic was a major positive. Two for right. Four in the power play. Decent. I mean, you know, kind of worried about what the power play might look like, but it looked pretty good. Other than that, though, Ryan O'Reilly, decent, but very few positives, Dan.
Hey, what are we going
to
do?
Well, okay, let's flip it on to you. Positives from the Blue Jays last night. What stood out?
Chris Bassett was great. Like, great. He keeps getting better and better every start. I mean, this is a good team, Houston, and a team that's familiar with him. He faced them a lot when he was with Oakland, and he came out and executed. Didn't give up a hit, I think, till the fifth, if I'm not mistaken. And the velocity was good. Used all of his pitches, located well. Vladdy got a ball in the air, hit a home run. That's always fun. That's a good sign. Matt Chapman did Matt Chapman things, which means he hit another home run and he made a great defensive play. And then Jordan Romano was great. Came in, got the last out of the eighth inning, and then got the three outs of the ninth to get the save. It was, I think I said right as we were going off the air, it's good, you know, good team win over a good team. I mean, a road win in Houston over a good team where lots of different guys contributed towards this win, especially after, you know, how poorly they had played the previous two games. So it was a good night for them.
Well, the Chris Bassett storyline has certainly been one that has gotten from bad to good, and it couldn't have gotten much worse after the first start, so that's a good direction to be going. I wonder what you think is the biggest reasoning for his turnaround. I know there's a lot of conversation early on, and we might have had you on that first week where it was like, okay, is he working through all the pitches and the pitch clock and pitch calm, and was there just a little bit of trial and error there? Have you seen a level of comfortability settling in for him that's led to this emergence of the Chris Bassett we want to see?
Yeah, no question. I mean, the St. Louis start, and I give him credit for, you know, for honesty. He came out of the game and he said, I really don't know what to say. Like, when he was talking to the media, he said, I really don't know what to say. Like, they hit every pitch I threw. They were unbelievably aggressive. It's almost like they were just up there, you know, swinging the first ball you see, swing as hard as you can, and he couldn't figure it out. Now, he made some mistakes in terms of location and all that, but he is definitely settling in. He's definitely gotten more comfortable with pitch calm. You know, he's a unique guy in the sense that he throws seven pitches, and that's a lot going on. So he wants to call his own game. And even last night, Buck and I were talking a couple of times. It's funny. You start watching the clock a little bit in a shot in a game like his, like you watch the shot clock in basketball. And I don't normally do that. But he's got so many pitches, when there's nobody on base, it's only 15 seconds, and he tends to walk to the back of the mound a little bit and then call the pitch and then get back up on the rubber and then throw the pitch. And sometimes that takes just about every available second that there is. But he's gotten in a rhythm and a flow where it's at his pace. And if he has to step off or throw over to first or whatever, or slow things down a little bit, he did that a couple of times as well. So I think definitely he has gotten more of a comfort zone, not only with pitch calm, with his catchers too. This is the third time in a row he's worked with Alejandro Kirk, and it's gone well. So I don't know if that'll be a thing going forward, but Bassett has definitely started to look like the guy the Blue Jays signed.
So the pitching story, however, isn't all positive. We're coming off a pretty strange and perplexing Kevin Gausman blow-up, and Alek Manoah failed in his chance to make it a clean sweep of the Tampa Bay Rays over the weekend. Though we are doing positive, though, and I think for Gausman, just a blip. And I guess for Manoah, if we're doing positivity, velocity up at least in his start Sunday?
Yeah, Gausman definitely just a blip. I mean, I think he's rock solid, reliable, and I don't think there's anything wrong with Kevin Gausman. Alek Manoah, it's 3 out of 4 that haven't gone the way that you want them to go. And yes, the velocity was up. If we're doing positivity, if we're not doing positivity, he's not locating very much at all. And, you know, making mistakes over the heart of the plate that get hit. But to me, the biggest part is his slider. He got so much swing and miss on his slider last year because he made it tempting to them. It was close enough that it looked like a strike, but it would wind up out of the strike zone. But now he's missing by too much. They're not swinging at it. So either you got to go away from it and throw a fastball, which they kind of know is coming if you can't land the slider, or you're hanging a slider over the heart of the plate. And very, very few pitchers are good enough to get away with that. So, and the next one is at Yankee Stadium with Garrett Cole on the other side on Saturday, right? So that's a big one. So internally, it's hard to get a read, guys, on what the concern meter is at right now. I think there is some concern. You know, it's, again, 3 out of 4 that haven't gone well. The stuff looks okay. It's about repeating his delivery, command, putting the ball where he wants to put it. Listen, he's a worker. He's a fighter. Everybody knows that. So he'll keep trying, and hopefully Saturday goes better.
And I don't like making this comparison to like a guy's mental toughness and the spot he's put in, but the playoff opener, the season opener, and the home opener were all really big spots for Manoah, and he didn't deliver. But you said his next game is Yankee Stadium, Garrett Cole on the other side of the mound. He loves playing there. I feel like this one is really, really big in terms of stopping that narrative alone, but just a confidence moment from Alek Manoah, who's certainly a guy that rides on that, who believes in himself, who wants to be the ace. He wants to be the bulldog out there. And I think that maybe this weighs a little bit heavier than the other starts. Is that right?
I would agree 100% with that. I think that's a great point. I mean, he does like the big moment, but as you say, in the playoff game, the season opener, or the home opener, maybe he's been a little bit too amped up. It's, you know, I always really hesitate to, you know, try to crawl inside somebody else's brain and figure out that stuff. But yeah, for sure, there's a narrative out there in certain corners about that. But at the same point, his major league debut was at Yankee Stadium, and he was great, right? He was great. And so I don't think he is shying away from the big moment or anything like that. So because it's Positivity Friday, I choose to look at it as coincidence. But, you know, this is the big leagues, and there will be a lot of eyes on Saturday's game. And the fact that it is Yankee Stadium and it is Cole, and remember, he had words for Cole last year when, you know, Cole came out of the dugout after stuff started going on in that game. It's not a Tuesday night in Kansas City. It just isn't, and you can't pretend that it is. But I think he'll be all right. I do think he'll be okay, because I do think the stuff is okay. And at the end of the day, if the stuff is okay, then I think everything else falls into place. But he is trying to work through some things right now, and you hope he goes out there with a clear mind on Saturday in the Bronx.
Do they still have the Audi sign on the turf out on the field at Yankee Stadium? Because we'll be having eyes on that.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to find out when we get there. I won't actually get there till Saturday. Don't shoot the messenger, but Friday, not you guys, I mean the listeners, but Friday's an Apple game, so... But Buck and Dan have the night off, but that's an MLB thing. That's not a Blue Jay thing or a Rogers thing. Like, every team has it. So I think they probably still do have the Audi sign there. But I imagine that Manoah, it's funny. Like, you know, what do we expect to see in terms of his vibe out on the mound, right? Is he a little bit more low key because he's not coming in there, you know, really, you know, dealing as much as well as he normally is? It'll be interesting. And here's what we know for sure, and it'll happen every time they go to Fenway too. Like, the opposing fans are going to be on him, and that's just the way it is, right? When you're a big guy with a big personality, and you've had a couple of great years, and you've shut down their teams, and you've had words with their star, He's going to be hearing it. So it'll be a bit of a scene on Saturday.
Yeah, in terms of product placement, I think Audi's got to be licking its chops that Alec Manoah is coming in. That's yes. the best thing for Audi, or at least yeah. the one game that they're going to have at Yankee Stadium. I know we're being positive, positive Wednesday. I'm going to trend a little negative here.
Oh, did I say Friday? I don't even know what day it is. Oh, I said it was Positivity Friday.
It's all good.
Well, it's just those two things.
They just go together. People are,
yeah, it goes together, Positivity Friday.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised we even know what day it is, to be honest. So this, it's hard to really quibble with what the Blue Jays have done. It's been a difficult schedule. They've won 60% of their games. However, the pitching's been up and down, and it's interesting because the biggest point of concern might be Alec Manoah, at least in terms of like what you can really bank on. But I feel like we're seeing maybe just a little bit of the limitations on doing the opposite of homegrown, like locking yourselves into a pretty expensive rotation. It's just... Is this the failure, and again, Manoah is homegrown, the failure to produce your own starters, is there just limitations on that as a general rule?
Yeah, if you don't produce, and it goes for any part of your roster, but I think it's kind of exacerbated with starting pitching. If you don't produce your own, you got to go out and get them somewhere. You got to either trade for them or sign them. Those are the only other two options. So, you know, yes, they're locked into, what is it, 7 years, 131 with Berríos. 3 years, 63 with Bassett, and 5 years, 110 with Gausman. Now, the Gausman deal was great last year, and I think it's going to be great going forward. Bassett's starting to look like himself. You know, Berríos, as good as he was last time, that's the one where you kind of wonder what will be. But producing your own talent is huge. Like, and we were talking about it during one of the Rays games. They trade for Drew Rasmussen from Milwaukee. They make him into a starter. He turns into a star. So, yes, they got him in a trade, but they traded their shortstop, Willy Adames. Who trades their starting shortstop? Well, they could do it because they had Wander Franco coming, and they knew he was going to be a star. So it was the depth of their system that allowed them to make the trade. So everything almost always comes back to producing your own talent. And that's why, listen, if Nate Pearson, and maybe he will still pan out as a very good major league reliever, but if we go back 4 years, 3 years, whatever it is, Nate Pearson was supposed to be a number one starter. He was supposed to be that guy. If Nate Pearson develops and becomes who you want him to become, one of these big money starters isn't on the team right now, and maybe that money is used elsewhere. So it all trickles down, right? There's a domino effect between all this stuff. So to answer your question, Justin, yes, it's very important. And if Ricky Tiedemann can become that guy, whether it's this year, next year, whatever, yes, that helps. But they are kind of locked into the five that they have right now. But listen, I give them credit for spending. Like they could have opted not to go out and get Chris Bassett and not spend that money and then have like a 4A guy or a journeyman guy in the fifth spot and hope for the best and that sort of thing. But in terms of flexibility, they don't really have a lot of it because the more you spend on a guy, the more likely you're going to see if he can work it out, right? They cut bait on Tanner Roark. You remember a couple of years ago, after two starts of his second season, they said this isn't working, and they ate about $11 million. But it's hard to do that, and not everybody does that. So hopefully these five work out because, as you say, they are heavily invested in all five of them.
Dan, lots we could cover in terms of the offense here for the Blue Jays, but I mean, Matt Chapman has had just an incredible start to the season. I think he's even been rumored to be one of the greatest Blue Jays of all time already. How enjoyable has it been to watch what he's done to start off the season?
It's great because, and I remember talking to him in the spring and I said, what are your goals offensively this year? Like, what did you work on in the winter? And he said two things, using the whole field and cutting down on my swing and miss. And I said, how do you hope to do that? And we talked about the toe tap. And I'm not a mechanics guy. Like, I can't do a deep dive on all that kind of stuff. But exactly what he said he was trying to fix and exactly how he said he was trying to fix it is exactly what's happening right now. Now, nobody does this for 162 games, but what he's doing right now is remarkable. And he said an interesting thing to me. He said, I remember we were like walking towards the field and he said, I know I'm going to struggle at some point, but when I struggle, I will have this to look back on because I know this works. I know this feels good. And I can go back and look at video. I'm really happy for him because, you know, Matt Chapman's a really good player when he hits 230 and strikes out a lot because of all of the other things that he brings. If he's going to hit, like make up a number, 270, I'm not saying 320 or anything like that, but if he's going to hit 270 and hit 35 homers and hit doubles to right center like crazy. I mean, he's an all-star player who gets some MVP votes. And he finished at something like 8th and 6th or 8th and 9th, whatever it is, in MVP balloting in 18 and 19 with Oakland. He's that good of a player. He's obviously an elite defender. And I will tell you, he is, in my opinion, the leader of the team. And they've got a few. Springer's a leader. Gausman's a leader. They've got others. But if I had to pick one guy, it's Matt Chapman. And that's, you know, I think that happened kind of midway through last year. And that was his first year on the team when he maybe wasn't playing as well as he would like to play. He carries a lot of weight in that room. And he was funny. He looked at me, he said, it's all about my timing and my toe tap and my lower half. And he pointed at his forearms. He goes, I know I'm pretty strong. And I was standing right beside him and my forearms looked like toothpicks, standing behind his. And I found myself saying, yeah, you are pretty strong or something like that. just mumbling incoherently or something. But he's an intense guy. He's a really cool guy to talk to. He puts in the work. You guys, if you ever come down to a game, come down early. Matt Chapman taking infield at 4 o'clock is like Matt Chapman playing in a game. There's no like practice speed. It's everything is done at game speed with game intensity. And it's just cool to watch him go about his business every day.
Last one for you, Dan, and look at me being negative again. But if there's something that's kind of bubbling under the surface in terms of talk radio fodder, it's the situation at second base and the dispersion of at bats between Biggio, Espinal, and Merrifield. If this is like experimentation, tryouts, get us to the trade deadline and see where we're going to land. Like, is that how long it takes? How long is the experimentation process before they kind of lock in on one guy and really name them their everyday second baseman?
Yeah, I think it's already starting to evolve, to be honest with you. So last night, a righty was on the mound. At the beginning of the season, Espinal was only playing against lefties, and it was kind of Merrifield or Biggio against righties, and Merrifield might be in the outfield. But last night, against a righty, like Biggio wasn't in there. Merrifield, who's been good, not electric, but good. He's coming up with a hit or a walk every single game. He was in there in the outfield, and Espinal was at second base. And Merrifield keeps hitting. And I think Merrifield will be at second base today against a righty, which is a bit of a departure. This is, the Blue Jays are in Houston. Kevin Biggio lives here. His parents sit in the stands when they watch the games here. And maybe Kevin will be in right field today. I'm not sure. But what I'm getting at is I think Merrifield is starting to get, some of those toss-up who could be there. I think Merrifield's going to be in the lineup more often than not. I think he's the most likely of the three to really get going with the bat if he gets regular playing time. I mean, he's obviously got the longest, strongest track record of the three. I still think he's going to move around a little bit. I asked John Schneider yesterday about his defense in the outfield, and he said, we're thrilled with it. And then I don't know if you saw it because of the Leaf game, but he made a really nice running catch, an important play in left field last night. I think Merrifield's going to go from playing 4 days a week to playing five, maybe 6 days a week, that sort of thing. And there might not be as much around for Espinal and Biggio right now. But because of Witt's versatility, there will still be some time. I don't think any of them are playing 7 days a week at second base. I don't see that happening. But it's a results-oriented business, and I think it will evolve to the point where the percentage of the time that each of them plays gets adjusted. And it's tough. Like Biggio's first 2 years were really good. He did very well. But right now, he's not swinging it great, and Merrifield's swinging it pretty well. I think Witt's going to get more and more time. But I don't think there's like a trade deadline or All-Star break or Memorial Day or anything like that. Last year it was supposed to be a platoon, and by day four, Espinal kind of took the job from Biggio. So I don't think it hasn't been that fast, obviously. But if Merrifield continues to hit, I think we're going to see him out there on almost an everyday basis.
Maybe a little friendly competition as well always makes for some good results out on a team. Dan, appreciate you joining us. Enjoy today's final game of the home trip into Houston, and then your day off on Friday and Thursday, and you'll be back Saturday. We'll listen to you. Can't wait for that big game with Manoah.
Can't wait, guys. Thanks very much.
Thanks so much, Dan. Appreciate it. That's Dan Shulman, Blue Jays play-by-play announcer at Sportsnet. Hard guy not to cheer for, Matt Chapman. He's in my wake and rake.
Wake up!
Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of accuracy.
Show me the money!
With Ailish and Justin.
mesmerized by the Matt Chapman start, so I'm going to go back to what's hot. We are just having a terrible start to the week, so with our picks, so I'm going Chapman over 1.5 bases tonight, plus 125.
Just like the Maple Leafs, let's get all the negativity out of the way, and let's look forward to game two or the third attempt at the Wake and Rake this week. I will keep it simple. Milwaukee lost game one against the Miami Heat on home floor. I don't know if Giannis is going to be available tonight. To be honest, I don't really care. They're 6.5-point favorites.
Did you say to be honest or to be Giannis?
To be Giannis. They need to respond. And they're good enough to win this game without Giannis Antetokounmpo. If you're going to be a legit NBA Finals favorite, which they are, maybe not anymore with Giannis status up in the air, but Milwaukee needs this one. I expect them to win comfortably. 6.5, I will take Milwaukee at home versus Miami.
All right, let's get through a couple here. I've just highlighted so we can just read quickly. Neil says, Krejcikova, moneyline versus Sabalenka. We've got Ron and Jules with the Lakers over Memphis and Bobichet over bases. Corey from Port Hope has Memphis on the moneyline versus the Lakers. We've got a Barrios over strikeouts and over 5.5 Leafs jerseys thrown on the ice after game two. Don't love that one. Jay's run line, -1.5, and then LeBron James over 6.5 assists tonight. That's Courier Chris. We've got Jeggins Garbo saying over on Chapman basis. There you go. Or under Wild and Stars game. Melon Thorold, first time texter in. Welcome. Blue Jays, Astros over runs. And then finally, we have a McDavid to score. McDavid over points. What do you like from that?
Okay, we have two Lakers there. We have one Lakers, one Memphis. Sorry, I read that wrong. That makes things a little bit easier because I didn't really want to go either way. That's an interesting game. It's a coin flip. I don't really have a lean, but if John Morant's out, you might be leaning Lakers. Barrios over K's interests me.
Okay.
And the other one that I like was from Jeg, the under and the Wild and Stars. It looks like Rock Fight Central.
So why don't we do that? So we've got one from baseball, basketball, and hockey.
Done.
Okay, so under in the Stars, I'm seeing it at 5.5, yeah?
That's a depressed total. Maybe tease it to 6?
Okay, let's tease it to 6. That being said, let me put this together quickly.
Put the 5.5 in.
Let's just put the 5.5 in.
Okay.
Live a little. Okay. All right. Our Wake and Rake today is going to be under in the Wild and the Stars, over Chapman bases and Milwaukee Bucks on the spread. Altogether, your parlay is 693. Damn.
That was a fun day. Like yesterday, pretty nightmarish. But if you can't like laugh and talk it through,
you gotta find a way through it.
Your head might explode. So I'm glad that we were able to go
with
through a three-hour
with our community. I appreciate everybody.
Session. And then we appreciate the calls. Yeah.
And then quickly, over under bunting suspension, 1.5 games.
Under, you already served one.
I'm going over.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for everyone for calling in, being a part of the post game reactions to game one, the Stanley Cup playoffs, the Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll be back tomorrow to tee up game two. It's a new day. Everyone take a deep breath, like Nick Kiprios said. We'll get through it.